My mother died when she was 50. I was 13. She never had a chance to fulfill her life. And so that always stuck with me, that we've got to, even if generations of women will never know our names and never know what we did to try to help, just getting more women on boards, and like Terry is doing with leadership training, is going to help women fulfill their lives to the greatest potential.
I think one of the challenges that we see is that women wake up way too late in their careers and say, oh, I want to aspire to the C-suite, or oh, I want to land a board position. And really it helps if you start thinking about it earlier and what your path might be to best position you for that.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational, cross-cultural conversation about female power, what it looks like, why it's important, and what we can all do to claim our power and put it to work, individually and collectively. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders, and a veteran change agent.
And I'm Monica Doyle, the millennial voice of this podcast and Anne's niece. Our topic today, women on boards, why increasing the percentage of women on corporate boards is urgent, and how we're doing with our progress, and why you should be thinking about this topic at every stage of your career.
And we have two fantastic leaders with us today, both of whom have been on the leadership front lines of this important issue for a couple of decades. Joining us from Los Angeles is my longtime friend, Betsy Berkemer-Crader, CEO of 2020 Women on Boards and author of The Board Game, How Smart Women Become Board Directors. Hi, Betsy.
Good afternoon and evening, Anne. Thank you. And Monica, great to be on your show. Thanks.
And Terry Barkley, CEO of Detroit-based Inforum, one of the largest professional women's networks in the United States, and also a founding member of the National ION Network, who is in the Motor City Woman Studios with us today. Welcome, my longtime friend, Terry Barkley.
Great to be here, Anne and Monica. Thank you.
So Betsy and Terry, rather than us introducing you, we thought you'd do a better job of introducing yourselves. Betsy, let's start with you and listen to the 2020 Women on Boards campaign.
Well, thank you both. 2020 Women on Boards is a national and now global campaign to reach 20% or more women directors on corporate publicly held company boards throughout the country. By the year 2020, which is the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote. Currently, the brand new 2018 statistics are that nationwide, women only hold 17.7% of all board seats in the Russell 3000, that's 3,000 largest companies in the U.S., as compared to, it's slightly increased, but as compared to 16.0% last year in 2017. So we're making small progress, but significant progress, and it's much better than going in the other direction.
Okay, and then Terry, if you could tell us a little bit more about you and Inforum and your work related to women on boards.
Well, Inforum is one of the largest and longest standing organizations for professional women in the country. We were founded in 1962, mm-hmm. and our
wow.
focus has relentlessly been on accelerating women's careers during that time period. And, of course, how we've gone about it has differed over the course of decades, but that has been our focus. And it's been my privilege to be there for a decade and a half now, really working with some of the largest companies in Michigan, but also those happen to be some of the largest companies in the country,
right.
as well as the executives who work there to find new ways to, you know, down in the trenches to really help elevate and celebrate the women achievers, as Anne talks about them in her book.
And what about ION? I mean, that's a piece of your work.
Yeah. So several years ago, about a dozen of the largest women's organizations in the country came together and formed a collaboration, a network. And our focus for the ION Network has been exclusively, well, we do best practice sharing and we get together to support each other, but our real focus on what has propelled us is getting more women on corporate boards. And we actually collaborate and share information about board openings and share the best practices that really help women get there quickly.
And Betsy, set us up in terms of what's happening this week. I mean, we're recording this in November, and this is an important week coming up nationally for this whole initiative in terms of women on boards. And I know that you have turbocharged this whole thing once you took over as CEO of Women on Boards just a couple of years ago.
Well, thanks. And yes, we're proud to partner with Inforum in Michigan to put on our National Conversation on Board Diversity events. And Terry has just been a terrific partner in developing each year, each of the past 6 years, we're going into our seventh annual conversation on board diversity, where we have here this coming week in November, November 14th and 15th, events in 25 cities in the U.S.
Wow.
And, about 5,000 men and women in total attending these events to hear for the first time the 2018 research that I just mentioned to you, and to celebrate those states especially who have already increased their membership of women on boards beyond the 20% mark, and that includes Michigan.
I was going to say, Betsy, do I hear a drum roll for Michigan?
Yeah, I was happy to see that. One of four states who are kind of leading the way. Is that it?
Yes, indeed. Terry, you want to give those statistics, or shall I?
Oh, no, go ahead. This is your research, and really okay. Your work to elevate this nationally has just been tremendous.
Oh, thank you. Well, the 2020 Women on Boards does provide, we work diligently every year to research the latest statistics of how many women serve on every board and naming those companies. And Michigan has 53 companies in our index or in the Russell 3000, and 25 of them, almost half, are at 20% or greater. Mm. And the percentage of women directors is 20.2%. And you're one of four states, as Ann said, that has exceeded the mark already this year. And there are currently in Michigan 93 women directors. And for the remaining 28 companies that are not yet at 20%, Michigan needs 32 more women to be added to those boards in order to reach 20% overall. So I think you can do it. And I think with the events that we're having in Michigan and certainly around the rest of the country, we're significantly going to up that effort and the numbers this year, because what we do in addition to the research is the public awareness campaign, educating women and collaborating with companies to help them achieve greater numbers. And companies want to, they just don't know who the women are whom they should consider as candidates.
Well, and I've found it interesting to see the boost we're getting from the institutional investor community in terms of, you know, the public awareness campaign, because BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street Advisors, the New York City Pension Fund, CalPERS, CalSTRS out in your neck of the woods, Betsy, not to mention the UAW Retiree Medical Benefit Trust, all from an institutional investor standpoint, are pushing for companies
saying we want.
We're not going to, you know.
We're not going to invest, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. And that's power, you know, putting the money behind this initiative. Monica,
right.
Why don't you weigh? Well, go ahead, Betsy, and then I want Monica to weigh in from her generational perspective on this topic.
Well, it's huge, because never before have the institutional investors or shareholders really made significant statements about the importance of women on boards, and it's because all the research from Credit Suisse, from McKinsey, from Heidrick & Struggles, and many other independent resources, research says that companies are more profitable when they have women on their boards, especially when they have three women directors on their boards. And you wonder, well, really? Are they more profitable just because of that? Well, it may not be immediately causal, but the women on boards tend to, yes, they take risks, and they do make advancements in the strategic leadership of the company, but they also are more calculated about what risks they take. They may decide, or women may come up with the idea, well, why should we close that factory with 3,000 families and put them out of work when we could just as easily make the money in this other direction? So women tend to think of all the unintended consequences, or at least that's one of the good aspects of having women on board.
Well, I have obviously been a little bit quiet for this because I feel like it's a little over my head. I tend to consider myself kind of on the lower side, you know, not quite as close to CEO-ship as. So I guess one of my first questions is basically to somebody like me who tends to be a little bit more salt of the earth, you know, lower on like a company rung type thing. How does women in charge, women CEOs, really affect the lower down parts of the company? Like, what are some of the benefits that we will see as we get more female CEOs in charge?
Well, that's such a great question. And I'm so glad you're here, because this is the time when you should start thinking about this. I think one of the challenges that we see is that women wake up way too late in their careers and say, oh, I want to aspire to the C-suite, or, oh, I want to land a board position. And really it helps if you start thinking about it earlier and what your path might be to best position you for that. But there's just been research after piece of research, as Betsy mentioned, that shows that the true diversity of thought, I mean, just makes such a difference in company performance. And in this particular environment that we're in right now, where the number one thing that I hear from companies every single day is the talent shortage. You know, you can't win the war for talent with half your talent sitting on the sidelines. You have got to make sure that your company is doing absolutely everything that it can. And you know, that half is the gender half that we need to get, you know, in the game and working for success at these companies. So that's why I think, you know, there's some really interesting stuff about from a recent PwC survey that said that 94% of directors agree that board diversity brings unique perspectives to the boardroom. Mm-hmm. And that means better decision making. 84% of currently serving directors agree it enhances board performance. So let's get moving.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And definitely, Monica, start when you're young. Women in their 30s could start the steps that it takes to at least give yourself the chance to serve on corporate boards. Because like Terry said, women wake up at age 60 and decide, oh, I think I'll serve on some corporate boards. And it's far too late to start your networking and your visibility and developing the value that you would add to a corporate board. So women in their 30s, now they're going to be more aware of the potential ultimate goal of their career. I mean, your ultimate goal should not be to retire at 65 and sit on the veranda, unless you really like that sort of thing. But to your ultimate goal could be to serve on one board, two or three, and continue to make income, continue to run companies when you're in what used to be called retirement years, and really enjoy your later life. So when you're in your 30s, the steps are to get on a nonprofit board and work your way up in that nonprofit. You can start as a volunteer. Get industry visibility in the industry that you're in, and you could easily get yourself on the board of your industry association. And then perhaps consider in your 40s getting on a commission. This is really an idea that women never think about, and that is getting on the Parks and Recreation Commission or the Women's Commission at the city, county, or state level in Michigan. And those commission positions, as well as nonprofits, tend to add to your network of influential people. And then you can, as your career builds, you'll keep them posted on what you're doing, and you'll be able to be at least considered for board positions if your background matches what a company is looking for. On down in your career when you're in your 50s and not quite 60s yet. Believe it or not, Monica, I know you don't believe it, but time will go by and you will get there.
Right? You know, and there's a piece of Monica's question that is related to not necessarily serving on corporate boards, because all women in the workforce aren't on that track, but also wondering why should they care in terms of what difference will it make for opportunities for women down through corporations if there are women serving in those powerful leadership
right.
positions on the corporate boards in the senior executive suites.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because the way that women are treated inside companies is influenced by the board. And as you might recall, with the Harvey Weinstein debacle and Steve Wynn being ousted from their companies for totally inappropriate and outrageous behavior toward women, there were no women on their boards. And now there are four women on the Wynn Resorts board. Of course, he's out. And, of course, the Weinstein company is gone.
And look at the Google walkout that we just had.
Right. You know? And the women are the ones who stood up and protested about
that.
But to look up and be able to see women on your corporate board makes the employees also feel more engaged and thinking that, well, I can work toward that. I can achieve or try to at least be recognized.
Or feel they have my back as a female employee.
That's really important.
And, you know, there's so many different kinds of boards, too. When we talk about this, we automatically talk about the big companies, but there's privately held companies.
Yeah.
You know, Bessie did a great job just pointing out all the different variety of types of service. And, you know, look at elections in our country. I mean, I think that we all intuitively know that it's better for us when there's a better balanced mix gender-wise in Congress, because it more represents the view of the people being governed. And I think the same holds true for running companies, that there is a force that is created as a result of that.
And, you know, you brought up elections, and I was really wondering, we have just experienced this incredible pink wave in this country with a tremendous number, unprecedented number, not enough, but unprecedented number of women elected to Congress and also governorships. Do you think there's a connection in terms of maybe people getting more comfortable with women in leadership, so that we're not going to see 1% increase year after year, this dragging along? Are we going to see a little turbocharge here?
I don't know. I may be foolish, but I think so. And there's a little bit of data that backs it up. There was a really interesting study that was just released by EY, where the EY, Ernst & Young, EY Center for Board Matters, and they found three things looking at the 2018, the very recent proxy season. Mm-hmm. And here were the conclusions that they drew when they looked at that proxy season that just ended, really. Nearly half of S&P boards now include three or more women. Nearly half. That's pretty astonishing. And most importantly, the rate of increase in women-held directorships has accelerated. It's starting to, the flywheel's turning, and I think it's starting to happen a little faster. And all male boards are becoming extinct. So we're starting to see more acceptance of diversity.
Well, and on that note, I was actually wondering, so it's been mentioned on this show before, my general field is ice hockey. I work a lot with ice hockey, which is, you know, as a woman, it's a little it's very difficult to, you know, wedge your way in there. And so one of the big questions that I wanted to ask was, how do you get your nose out there? How do you put yourself in there? And when you find yourself going into a field as a woman, how do you get them to see you as more than just that? Like, what are some things you've experienced before of ways that you can have them see you for more than just your gender? You know, we have people constantly being asked the question, what's it like to be a woman in your field? Which is just a total throwaway question.
Yep.
you know, because it doesn't matter that I'm a woman in my field. It matters that I'm a professional in my field, you know, and nobody ever asks a man, how does it feel to be a man in your field? Nobody asks that
unless
question.
Unless they're in cosmetics.
Yeah. Or like ballet or something. And even then, it's like, who cares? But so like if you find yourself, when you find yourself in a like over-dominated male society, company, whatever the case may be, what are some good ways to kind of go beyond the elephant in the room being you're a woman?
Wow, and that's at every level, isn't it?
Right.
A powerful question related to in the boardroom or starting out.
It never does
well,
end.
Well, I've got two experts here, so come on, Terry and Betsy, share your wisdom.
What I didn't say about my career is that I've owned a retained executive search firm for 25 years and done board searches as well as other C-suite. That means officers reporting to the CEO of companies and advising women how to get there. And whether it's women or men, the number one job is to do a great job at what you're doing. But not to be a shrinking violet about it. A lot of women tend to stay under the green eye shade and just do a great job of what they at what they're doing, but nobody ever knows about it. So it's important to not boast, but at least let the upper ups know that you led the team, that you were responsible for a vision or strategy that helped to achieve a result. And achieving results, not just having skills, but achieving results that are measurable, whether it's 15% increase in sales or 25% increase in employee productivity, things that can be measured. Solving problems. So if you can identify those and do a great job at what you're doing, also the fact that more women are getting into senior level positions, women are helping other women. And not any kind of perhaps formal mentoring relationships, but through cups of coffee and counsel to help other women advance. And this is really a great advancement here in the population of being women in business that it didn't used to be. The old school women would, there was only one seat available at the top and a woman would get it and then she'd close the door behind her. That generation is long gone. Women are helping one another, and if they don't, like Madeline Albright said, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help one another.
Yeah.
So it's important to keep that in mind and ask the counsel of women who are above your corporate status as you move up.
Terry, what have you seen in terms of a change in all of this? You've been engaged on the front lines of this for long time.
Well, and we've had over 2,000 women who've been through our leadership development programs over the last decade. And so what's interesting about that is you start to see trends. And so I think that everything that Betsy said is spot on. I mean, being very good at what you do is, it's just table stakes. What I see as an Achilles heel for so many women is the issue of confidence. Mm-hmm. And what happens, especially in the corporate world, is confidence gets mistaken for competence. And so when there are the talent management discussions behind the scenes, that is at the root of why so many men who may have equal or even lesser skills sometimes get the chance at the promotion of the job because they're seen as capable of doing it because they project that confidence. And so at the root of all of that is that really has to do with self-awareness. And so that soft skill that you don't hear a lot of people talking about often, emotional intelligence, being very self-aware, is how you can get to that, the root of that in yourself. And, you know, a trick that I used with myself, because it's tricky, you know, self-promotion for women is tricky. Mm-hmm. But when I thought about communicating with my own board of directors as a CEO, you know, I started thinking, you know, they're not clairvoyant. If I can think of it as communicating what's happening. And when you frame it with that thought in mind, it doesn't come across as boastful. It comes across as information and essential information. And so every conversation or interaction that you have with people where you're succinctly conveying your value proposition and what you bring to the table, you know, I think you get better at that with practice. But at the root of that is you really got to understand yourself and what makes you tick.
Well, and I go ahead.
Well, as I said, those are excellent points, Terry. And I just would add that practice that you just mentioned is so important for gaining confidence. So women tell me, well, where do I practice? I mean, if I can't practice at work, and that's where the nonprofit boards or nonprofit volunteer activity comes into play, because you can practice your leadership skills. And really, if you make a mistake, it doesn't mean you're going to lose your job, but practice in the civic arena, where you can be visible, you can develop contacts, you're also practicing your leadership skills and developing that confidence, like Terry said, is critically important.
Well, and another thing that I've noticed in workplaces that are predominantly men that, you know, women have to try and edge their way into is this, let's call it a phenomenon that I call gatekeeping, which is essentially, in order to be seen as equal to the men in a particular section of a professional world, you have to know more than them. And if you mess up, if you slip up, if you come in with your confidence and they find a single chink in your armor, then they're going to, you know, abuse that. And so I'm certain, you know, this happens on boards as well as lower down. It's been happening to me my entire life, this gatekeeping aspect of it. So are there ways to educate men on this type of thing? Is there any work within your company being done particularly with that aspect, as educating the men in how they need to accept women onto boards, accept women into workplaces?
I love this question, because part of Inform's strategic focus over the last couple of years has been focusing on men as allies.
Oh, good.
we've got a couple of really special initiatives that we're working on right now. One, we have a Men as Allies Roundtable, and it's a C-suite group of guys, invitation only, and they come together, and it's a confidential safe space for them to talk about what more they can do as leaders, both within their company but within the community. You know, what more can they be doing? And I will tell you that one of the projects they've taken on is supporting our board access initiative. And so they've done a number of very quiet, behind the scenes, but very effective strategic connection networking events with us, and door opening for board opportunities that have resulted in placements. So they are putting, you know, their words into action. And the other thing that we've embarked on, you know, we've been busy developing and supporting women in their leadership journey. This last year, we launched our first program aimed more at men.
Younger men.
Called Confidently Leading Diverse Teams. And it's really aimed at male leaders at all levels. This is not just senior people, but, you know, male leaders who have been charged by their companies to produce, you know, hey, this is what we're, we've got, you've got to produce an effective workforce. And, you know, so, gosh, how do I go about doing that? Mm-hmm. And that has been a real eye-opener, because what it does is it creates a really safe environment where those aha moments can occur, and we've seen them happen in the class where, you know, they're seeing how, oh, my gosh, now I understand how that gatekeeper function was functioning. I wasn't even aware.
Mm-hmm. You know, Terry, that's just brilliant, and also a great question from Monica. I just would add that an African-American woman whom I've interviewed for my next book says that her CEO, who's an Anglo male, told her, I'm so glad you're on my board because you can help me understand how to deal with these diversity issues. Mm-hmm. Just like you're saying, they don't know. They want to. They mm-hmm. want to be good at it, but they need coaching and training, and so I applaud your program. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you. We're finding our way.
Well, I want to give both of you an opportunity to sort of, you know, weigh in your last message here to our audience. And I hope you'll include in that why you care so much, because both of you, I've known you a long time, and I know you both care deeply about this issue, and you've got to have a fire in your belly to keep working at this for year after year after year. So I hear you laughing there, Betsy.
Yeah, right.
What's your last word here?
Until our last day. Well, should I go first?
There? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think, number one, we are women, and we come out of the generation of the 60s when women started businesses, and in the 70s, really, for the first time. I started my first business back then, and there were so many obstacles. You couldn't get a loan without a male co-signing a loan for you. It didn't even have to be a relative. Could it be a guy off the street? That's how I got several boyfriends just asking to sign my loan paper.
And no credit cards.
Credit card.
Couldn't get a credit card.
Couldn't get it, just in the 70s. And then you couldn't, and it didn't happen to me, but other women starting businesses had to sign a paper with the bank that they would not have a baby until their loan was paid off. And that was legal then.
Okay, so I'll just not have a baby.
All of these things that add up, that women have had a raw deal. And, of course, we've seen within the Me Too era that how it's manifested itself in today's world. And my mother died when she was 50. I was 13. She never had a chance to fulfill her life. And so that always stuck with me, that we've got to, even if generations of women will never know our names and never know what we did to try to help, just getting more women on boards, and like Terry is doing with leadership training, is going to help women fulfill their lives to the greatest potential. Yes, they can have babies, they can have husbands, but if they have a career and they make money and have fun along the way, that is their fullest potential. So that's why I'm so passionate, and I'm going to be working at this until they call 9/11 and haul me off to the the graveyard. And I hope that's a lot of years from now, because we have got a lot of work to get from 20% to 50% on corporate boards.
Exactly. I have this image.
We can do it.
Yeah. Well, I have this image that I've said to people about, I'm going to be in a wheelchair railing about power up, women, power up. Terry, what's your passion all about?
You know, I think it comes down to economic security at its root. And I know that sounds boring, but when you think about the balance of power in families and in our community, when that balance of power gets out of whack, there's a lot of bad stuff that starts to happen. You know, it opens the door for all kinds of things. And, you know, I've always had that, just that fierce determination that anyone who wants to put the work in to do something should be able to do it. And there shouldn't be any silly requirements or barriers in the way. Yeah, gatekeeping, whether it's gender or race or age or anything. Our ability, I mean,
disability, yeah.
You name it. Mm-hmm. And so when you see that potential just being wasted when there's no need for it, and you see how lives are transformed when that opportunity does exist. So I wish, you know, I think a lot of people think we're over this hump and that the challenge is an old challenge.
A lot of men think we're over that hump.
But, yeah, women don't think that, right?
But when you look at the data, we clearly have more work to do. And until we're there, we all need to be pulling together and doing it.
Well, and Terry, you're absolutely right about financial security. And the what women don't realize is that you make money on corporate boards. So in addition to your day job, it's an annual cash compensation plus stock. And that can men have known about it for years, and that's how they've built their wealth over the years, where you could earn $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, on being on a board and build your stock portfolio. And you're right on target with the financial security, because why should a woman depend on anybody else to be confident in her own ability to make a living and be able to support herself and her family throughout her life? So I think you hit it right on the head.
Well, great topic. This is an important week. Big events all around the United States, always November 14th and 15th this year and going forward. So I want to say thank you to Betsy Berkemer-Cradaire, CEO of 2020 Women on Boards, the national education and advocacy campaign, whose mission is to increase the number of women serving on corporate boards. So how do people get in touch with you, your organization, Betsy, and also get your book?
Well, thank you. The website for 2020 Women on Boards is just that, 2020wob.com, and all the latest statistics are on that website. It's called the Gender Diversity Index, and the list of 25 cities in the country, including Detroit, where to go and where to sign up to attend, all on the website. And my book will come out in February, called The Board Game, How Women Directors Make a Difference, and we'll be announcing that. The website is called winningtheboardgame.com.
Awesome.
And Terry Barkley, CEO of Inforum, one of the largest women's professional organizations in the U.S., and founding member of National ION Network of Women's Organizations working together on this issue. How do we get in touch with you and Inforum?
InforumMichigan.org. And everything's there on the website. And ION Women is the way to get in touch with ION.
All right. Well, you both had that message also about the importance of supporting your sisters. And I love this cross-generational conversation that Monica brings such great perspective to this. And this millennial generation of women, wow, they are so cool. So thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you'll subscribe to our Powering Up podcast and share it with your network. And remember, power is the currency for getting things done. That's why getting comfortable with power is essential. I'm Ann Doyle.
And I'm Monica Doyle.
Now, let's all go power up.
Power up.
Power up.